you're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet. In the room, I have Rob.
Fight me.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Wash your butt!
Fear of a Black Planet is the third studio album by the American hip-hop group Public Enemy. It was released on April 10th, 1990 by Def Jam Records and Columbia Records and produced by the group's production team, The Bomb Squad. The genre is hardcore hip-hop, political rap, East Coast hip-hop, sampledelia, progressive rap. I'm going to read from all the music reviews, Stephen Thomas Erlewine. At the time of its release in March 1990, just by mere 2 years after It Takes a Nation of Millions, nearly all of the attention spent on Public Enemy's third album, Fear of Black Planet, was concentrated on the dying controversy over Professor Griff's anti-Semitic statements of 1989 and how leader Chuck D bludgeoned the public relations regarding his dismissal. References to the controversy were scattered throughout the album, and it fueled the incendiary lead single, Welcome to the Terrordome. But years later, after the furor has died down, what remains is a remarkable piece of modern art, a record that ushered in the 90s in a hail of multiculturalism and kaleidoscopic confusion. It also easily stands as the Bomb Squad's finest musical moment, where Millions was all about aggression, layered aggression, but aggression nonetheless. Fear of a Black Planet encompasses everything, touching on seductive grooves, relentless beats, hard funk, and dub reggae without blinking an eye. All the more impressive is that it is one of the records made during the golden age of sampling before legal limits were set on sampling. So this is a wild, endless, layered record filled with familiar sounds you can't place. It's nearly as heady as the Beastie Boys' magnum opus, Paul's Boutique, and how it pulls from anonymous and familiar sources to create something totally original and modern. While the Bomb Squad were casting a wider net, Chuck D's writing was tighter than ever, and each track tackling a specific topic, a sentiment that spills over to Flavor Flav, who delivers the pungent black humor of 911 is a joke, perhaps the best known song here. Chuck gets himself into trouble here and there, most notoriously on Meet the G That Killed Me, where he skirts with homophobia, but by and large, it's never been so eloquent, angry, or persuasive as he is here. This isn't as revolutionary or as potent as Millions, but it holds together better. And as a piece of music, this is the best hip hop has ever had to offer. All right. What do we think of Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet?
Well, to quote my friend Kyle Beach, masterpiece.
Yes, it is quite
the fucking awesome
album.
An incredible artistic achievement.
This is one of the
blowing my mind this week.
Yeah, this is one of the albums that I had, Takes a Nation, when I was in high school. So I obviously picked this up because I was such a fan of that album. And this one I didn't get it as into. And I know now why, because it's denser and it's, I don't know, you just have to be in the right headspace. For some reason, it Takes a Nation of Millions, it had those like hooks that I could just kind of grab onto. This one doesn't have the immediacy, but I think it has so much going on that once you get into it and once you listen to it, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't even, it's like a cake, a beautiful layered cake.
It's got that hard funk. Like I'm bobbing up and down the entire 63 minutes that this album is on. I can't my butt's moving. My shoulders are moving. I've got a 14-month-old son, Henry, and he's recently, like when like a Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something comes on, a song you recognize, he like starts like dancing like a little kid does, like bobbing his head and bobbing up and down. He was sitting, I was feeding him dinner today and I was playing Fear of a Black Planet, and he was rocking out so hard. I have not seen him boogie down so much than when listening to a Bomb Squad production. Like his eyes are squinting, he's like, yes, yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
He gets it.
Yeah, jumping back to what they were saying, like this being one of the last of the pre-litigation records, this album, if it were to come out as of like 2020, they would have lost $5 for each record sold because of the amount of samples they used on it.
Yep.
So the multi-platinum record would have lost $2 million.
Yep.
It could have been $5 million, I think. It's fucking nuts. Like hip-hop evolved, you know, it. They figured out other shit that to do. But man, like just like that nail in the coffin of all of this creativity, like is insane. And what they did with the fucking technology they were using is just goddamn insane.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, when Chuck was being interviewed, he said the sample, it's a shame for the samples because what he was, you know, what they were imagining is like when you have loops, when you have the basis for the song, fine, we'll pay for that. When you have a little snippet of a, you know, a 2-second clip of someone from a movie saying a, you know, something or whatever, that's not the song.
No.
But still, that became a legal, you know, contention moving forward, and so they'd have to clear all of those things. Whereas this, there's things that they did, they just scratched it beyond belief. You don't even know where half this stuff comes from. You wouldn't be able to pick it out, you know, even if you listen to it. But unfortunately, yeah, we have the system now that, you know, restricts that. And so
got to pay those turtles.
Yeah, exactly. Got to pay the turtles.
I mean,
they like green for sure.
There's a little bit of a fair use still. I mean, like, you know, you can sample a kit.
Sure.
You know, you can sample the entirety of like the, you know, the funky drummer pick out the open hi-hat, closed hi-hat, snare, and bass drum, and you can play the entire beat yourself, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But somehow the loop's weird.
I mean,
we're in the golden age. We should enjoy it while we can.
I know. I'm as disappointed as you, because listening to it this past week, I was like, God, why can't we have, you know, something like this? Like, where is this? And it's obvious, you know, people are doing amazing things, you know, but they can't do the fact that they can't do what they used to do. It's like when I lament the people no longer using, you know, film like 35 millimeter, 70 millimeter or something like that. Like you have to be at a certain level to do that. Like people can't do that anymore.
Quentin is able to do those things.
Yeah.
And Christopher Nolan is also able to do those things.
Yeah.
But yeah, 911 is a joke.
Love it.
That video is so good.
Wonderful.
Flav's got a few like solo tracks on this album, and I like them. Like
he's good.
I love Flav as like the court jester, like the little bit of sugar to swallow Chuck D's bitter pill. I think that he's so effective as that, the yin yang of Public Enemy, just like coming in with a goofy line once in a while to like let a bit of the pressure out of the room.
Yeah.
But the tracks that I did not expect to like his solo tracks as much as I did. They're great.
Yeah. They're really well constructed. Yeah. I mean, I liked him on Ticks and Nation too. I mean, when he's lamping, cold lamping, I mean, has some of the most memorable lines. So does 911. But you're right. I mean, it's not Public Enemy without Flavor. Like that, the dynamic is what makes this band. Chuck D is, I mean, maybe my favorite rapper or close to, you know, but at the same time.
Without Flavor Flav, Chuck D would have been just at like Tompkins Square Park screaming at people.
No.
He would have had his soapbox just like You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. No. You're idiots.
He'd have been organizing. He would have been doing the damn thing.
Professor Charles D.
Yes.
Fair.
He actually came and spoke at IU. Did you go to that?
I was there. Yeah. I went to that.
Oh, so good.
God damn. Oh, god damn.
Yeah, we're listening to...
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Oh, god damn.
Which is considered by many their... the height of Public Enemy and of, you know, hip hop of this era, you know.
The stuff that Chuck D was saying in like 1987 and or 1989 and 1990, Dorky Kid in Indiana. It was so controversial, the stuff that Chuck D was saying and the image of Public Enemy. I remember I had a sixth grade teacher that told me that the Public Enemy logo was the crosshairs on a cop. He's like, because they want to kill cops. It wasn't until I was an adult that they were like, no, it's the crosshair on the black man in America, you know.
But I'm sorry, sir, I just have to go to the bathroom. Can I have to all pass, please?
But with a 2022 perspective, all of the stuff that Chuck D is saying, well, I don't want to say all of the stuff because I haven't combed through this entire album word for word, but all the stuff that was hitting my ears, it was just not controversial at all. In fact, like good ideas. I don't know. Just like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking myself in a corner. But what I did notice, though, other albums that we've been listening to recently, one of the thing, other like hip hop albums of this era, one of the things that would bother me a little bit was like the misogyny in the lyrics that didn't age well. Whereas on Fear of a Black Planet, we've got tracks like Revolutionary Generation, which is a straight up feminist track. And I love it. I don't know.
Yeah.
This album is what, like 30 years old, and it sounds so fresh to me.
Yeah. Tag on to that, you know, Fear of a Black Planet explores themes of organizing and empowerment within the black community, social issues affecting African Americans, and race revelations at the time. The record's criticism of institutional racism, white supremacy, and the power elite was partially inspired by Dr. Francis Cress Welching's views on color. So, I mean, you're right. Like, when I was listening to, I'll just say again, Ice Cube, and I was just like, okay, cool. I mean, I get it, but I'm here for the Chuck D of like, here's what's going on. Let me tell you about it. The violence is like, this is what's happening. People are getting shot. You know, it's a careful critique of things from his point of view.
Yeah, use it's words,
like a,
not
it's
guns.
It's like a call to action. You yeah, know, like call we got to yeah. we got to get organized. You know, yeah. Like the content of Fear of a Black Planet and another one of the albums that we're listening to right now was the Sinead O'Connor album from 1990, the I Do Not Want What I Don't Have. I remember in 1990, like Public Enemy being so controversial for what they were saying with their platform and Sinead O'Connor being so controversial with what she was saying with her platform. And then here in 2022, the stuff that they're saying isn't really controversial at all. It's pretty much widely accepted facts of like institutional racism, of like crimes within the Catholic Church. Like history has proven these controversial characters of the early 1990s absolutely correct.
Gotta shoot that messenger.
It's yeah.
Gotta shoot that messenger.
Well, and I will say, Public Enemy, they're very aggressive, right? So when they're performing a concert, militant, you know, uniforms, the way that they're presenting themselves is how the Black Panthers would have been, you know, presenting mm-hmm. themselves when they're showing up to do protests. And I think that just, you know, it leads to fear, and fear leads to hate.
And hate leads to suffering.
There you go.
And thank you,
Black
Yoda.
Panthers got a bad rap, too.
And so I think, you know, a lot of people were scared. And then they in turn, were then lumped in with NWA, right? So it's like, I mean, if these people are advocating for violence, Public Enemy must be doing the same thing, you know, when they're talking about.
Which is addressed on one of the tracks on here.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the amazing thing I think about this album that I didn't get when It Takes a Nation of Millions came out. Like, I did not understand that everything that was going on, like, was sort of like a reference or had a, it was a concentrated subject, right? 9-1-1, Welcome to the Terror Dome, all those things, Revolution. All those things had like a single kind of purpose, mission statement, and then they have this beautiful, dense production behind it.
Yeah. Yeah, Meet the G That Killed Me didn't age well.
Yeah, that is the one that just does not does not age well.
But Polly Won a Cracker, that's a fucking banger.
Oh, Polly Won a Cracker.
Yeah, Polly Won a Cracker.
Yeah, so Polly Won a Cracker. There are some on here where I... Chuck does a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one, Reggae Jacks, War 31 and a Third. He almost has like a, what would you say, like a spoken word.
Yeah, this approach. Sounds like the DJ from the Funk or the Parliament record. Like he's like harnessing like the DJ character from. I can't even remember the name of the fucking record now, but. Mothership Connection.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I could hear that.
Sure. I did really love that they called, Chuck called Eric Vietnam Sadler, Keith Shockley, and his brother Hank Shockley, the Phil Spector of hip hop.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I get it.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a wall of sound.
And he called it the wall of noise. He said that they took so long creating this, and it could have been even better if they didn't have the time constraints.
Yeah.
Because the way that they sampled it, they sort of, Hank Shockley said, called it a production assembly line. Each person had their own particular speciality. Shockley came at it from a DJ's perspective, Eric Sadler coming at it from a musician's perspective. Sadler's approach was more traditional, structured, while Shockley's was more experimental. And then, of course, Chuck D wanted to recontextualize the sampled material into his lyrics and create a theme around it. So they all kind of had their own individual parts that that brought it together.
Didn't they have a system where they were almost able to jam?
Yeah, they synchronized the samples. They used SMPTE time codes and arranged and overdub parts of backing tracks. And they had been like inspected by the members for snare, bass, hi-hat sounds. And then it was all like piled onto each other. And they just did loops on top of loops on top of loops. And then in the mix, they cut the things away.
Yeah. So almost subtractive synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
And he said a lot of times it just sounded like noise. Like they couldn't get it to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, it was like, you know, making a stew or making a meal and putting all these ingredients in. And then most of the time it just tasted like garbage. It's not good. And then he was like, it's magic when it works though.
Yeah. It's like throwing an entire block of cheese ahead of lettuce and a whole tomato and like vinegar and oil into a thing. And then, you know, from there, like just removing things and mixing it. It is a good salad.
Yeah.
Oh, goddamn. What a. Yeah. Equipment wise, I know S900 still, they probably had a multitude of them and just a Mac.
A Macintosh computer, Emu SP 1200.
Okay.
As a sampler and a Akai S900. Yep. Mac.
Okay. They had to have had multiple, man.
There's, sure.
Yeah. The S900 is known for its low pass filter. That's the. Like it, no sample time whatsoever, but the filter can't be stopped.
I also kind of, you know, putting headphones on this week, listening to this, I was like, how are they getting such good bass? Like whoever's like mixing from these old records or however this is layered, I just don't understand it.
I'm telling you, it is the S900.
Okay. That's incredible though.
Yeah. That's why it's still used today, just for that filter. And also, like, you know, the frequent, like the sampling frequencies are soothing, a little dirty.
It was nice to hear Cube show up on Burn Hollywood Burn, and it ties the whole story together of a few weeks ago when we were talking about America's Most Wanted.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
That was when he showed up at the studio and then they dropped him off at a warehouse the next day and said, stay here for 10 days.
So, yeah. And Big Daddy Kane was on that track. Loved Burn Hollywood Burn. You want to talk about, you know, we usually consider Hollywood, you know, people say Hollywood elites or whatever, the liberal community of Hollywood or whatever. It is one thing to take on, you know, it shows their variety of being like, no, we're going to throw in your face, you know, the sort of institutionalized like racism. It's not just like on the streets.
No,
it's in Hollywood. Yep. You know, like I love that about Public Enemy. They will take on all comers and they're not sort of afraid to do it. Unfortunately, yes, Griff with the statements of anti-Semitic statements, things like that. Obviously, you know, he apologized afterwards. He was let go, but then he came back in. It's strange.
Yeah, I mean, here in 2022, we're dealing with Kanye West, losing all sponsorship because he won't stop doing this anti-Semitic bullshit, which he called Ice Cube out as a, like, learned it from watching you, Cube.
Yeah, yeah. It's one thing. I think it's one thing for someone to...
He didn't.
To say something, right. We're going to get that with a lot of these artists that are like, I said something, I'm very sorry, I didn't mean it, or that's not apologizing, you know, making amends and kind of addressing it is always...
Which Griff did.
Great. Yeah, and Griff did. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say is like, and I'm sure... I looked up Chuck D, you know, when people are calling out, be like, hey, this song's like kind of homophobic. And he's like addressed that and was like, yeah, that's not, you know, the same thing with a lot of artists, you know, we'll be like, yeah, I, you know, that's, you know, we all look back in hindsight. Right. So calling someone out is not a bad thing, but it's also to how someone responds.
Sure.
Do they double down? They're like, no, this is right. Like, this is what I said. And this is what I want to address, but whatever you want to say. I don't know.
No, I'm a fan of grace and watch and allowing people to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there you go. That's just don't double down on anti-Semitism. It's a bad look.
Yeah.
Knock it off, Kanye. Take your meds.
I will say one of my favorite parts is when Chuck D rhymes, Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant shit to me. Straight up racist, the sucker was simple and plain. Favorite Flav falling with motherfuck him and John Wayne. The lyrics, the crazy thing is most people thought those lyrics were the most shocking and offensive to the listeners at the time. Either he was talking about, you know, he was just saying it metaphorically, or he was saying it symbolically, that, you know, Elvis essentially was mimicking, you know, black artists at the time. And I think even Elvis at the time, which was being like, I like this type of music. Yeah. These like, I don't think,
you know,
he was a fan of that, but it's fine for, you know, I feel like Chuck D can still call it out and be like, this is what happened in music history.
Up until Flav jumps in with his stinger of like, you know, motherfuck him and John Wayne, which is classic, by the way. Like up until that, Chuck D's not even saying anything bad about Elvis. He's saying he's a hero to most, but not to me. He's not saying anything about the guy's character.
No, he said he's simple and plain.
Okay. Well, you know, but still.
He's not wrong. He's also in the ground already. But the John Wayne thing, no, he was a real fucking racist piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck so, John Wayne.
Like he tried to beat up that lady that was pretending to be an Indian or a Native American, like that took the award for Brando.
She wasn't pretending.
It's come out she was a white lady. Like
Little Feather?
Little Feather was a really? Regular ass white lady.
Yeah, I read that just this past week.
That's
yeah.
crazy. Cause she died recently, right?
Yeah, she died yeah. recently and it
that's wild.
It is fucking yeah. wild. John Wayne tried to beat the shit out of her.
Well, I knew that. Yeah, I'd heard that, but which is well, hilarious like, while wearing a tuxedo, movies, you know, like, right?
while at an award ceremony.
Yeah, it might have just been PTSD from, all the,
say,
from all the cowboys.
It's all the cowboy movies. And it's just like, oh no,
the dementia's got me.
Oh man.
Oh my god.
Ugh. Bleh.
But yeah, I think it's funny that you know just shit talking Elvis and John Wayne. And everyone's up in arms, like freaking out.
Yeah, they aren't really a fan of them, like preaching about Farrakhan. They didn't like that very much
either. Right, but I'm just saying. I mean, even if they were to say, you know, cuss out the president, I don't think that would have been as quote unquote, you know, offensive yeah, to, right, to people. Right. Like people, it proved, you know, the statements they were saying of those were like, look. Your heroes are not my heroes.
That's just fact. You know, like people shouldn't be like aghast that someone has a different perspective than them.
At this time, you know, it's like they were trying to get that across. It's like God save the Queen, I guess.
Going gone. Now I dialed 911 a long time ago. But don't you see how late they're reacting? They only come and they come when they wanna. So get more trucking and bomb the corner. They don't care cause they stay paid anyway. They treat you like an ace that can't beat the tray. I know you stumble with no use people. If your life is on the line, then you're dead today. Late comers with the late comers stretcher. That's a body bag in disguise.
With my tinfoil hat on, it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit that the lawyers that were suing on behalf of the people for their sampling were doing that specifically to shut down this band and what they
oh,
were
wow,
saying.
Yeah. I hadn't
well, it takes a
together.
Nation of millions, Rob.
Yeah, it does.
Nah, it takes about 4 or 5 lawyers, turns out.
A fun fact I did learn, it was said a song like Bring the Noise, you must have performed hundreds of times, if not thousands. And Chuck says, yeah, but you know what? I just got off the plane at Charlottesville and I was sitting next to a man leaning against the window. At first, I thought it was Fats Domino. I couldn't tell from the side. But then he turned around and I realized it was Percy Sledge. He wakes up and we talk and I ask him how many times he sung When a Man Loves a Woman. And he said it must be 6 million times, which kind of puts Bring the Noise into perspective. Right there, I thought if Percy Sledge can sing When a Man Loves a Woman 6 million times, I can do Bring the Noise for 20 more years. I have no
complaints. How many times per day did Percy Sledge sing When a Man Loves a Woman, though?
I do not think it's 6 million, but
I don't. It
a lot.
It mathematically, it would be hard for it to be 6
yes,
million.
Yes,
but I'm sure he has sung it an uncountable number of times.
Right. Shows you the dedication.
So if it was only for 1 year, he would have had to have sung the song 16,438 times. So
doesn't the math doesn't add
if
up,
we divided
me,
that
no,
by
no. like 40, 1968 to 1988.
So it'd be 411 times a day to do that.
We'll have to figure out how long that song is to see how much time he has in between singing the song to like drink water, breathe, you know, go to the bathroom.
Chuck D also called Fear of a Black Planet a record entirely of, quote, found sound, probably the most elaborate smorgasbord of sound that we did. When we put it together, our music, we tried to put layers that complement each other, and the voices tried to complement that, and the theme tries to complement that, and then the song itself tries to complement the album as a whole, fitting the overall context. Good job.
Yeah, you did it.
Amazing. Debuted at number 40 on the Billboard Top Pop Album chart. Crazy. Charted for 10 weeks. Reached number 4 in the UK. And,
number 4. Wow.
And by July 1990, it had sold 1.5 million in the US. That's why they wanted to shut this down, I feel like.
Yeah. It was getting to the youth, man.
It was, yeah.
Can't have that.
Well, and the sampling. I miss... Assuming that,
oh yeah, for sure.
When you see that many copies sold, and you're like, "Wait,
there's
but my
gold
thing,
in them there hills."
Yeah, exactly. People who have no context of like why people are you know, buying the album and just being like, well, they sampled my music, so shouldn't I get money for this? Or I have a...
No, you shouldn't.
It depends.
It's collage, you sons of bitches.
It depends.
It's aural collage. I don't know how that...
Musique concrete.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's found sounds that someone else recorded, sure. But, I mean, it's still... It's more than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely.
And then that's the problem. Like, you know, it's a brand new thing because of everything that's been added on top of it.
Anything stand out this week listening to it?
Just that Fight the Power is really good still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Fear of a Black Planet. I really love Revolutionary Generation. I love Burn Hollywood Burn. I love Brothers Gonna Work It Out. I love 911 as a joke. I was bopping along to Can't Do Nothing For You, Man.
Oh, yeah.
I do like when Flava is just dissing at the end of the song. He's like, you're on welfare. You got a tear in your couch. Wash your butt. And then he cracks himself up that just for the rest of the track, he's just laughing at his own joke. Like, that made me laugh.
Yeah, that's good. I also really liked Instant at 66.6 FM.
Oh, yeah.
For the call-in show.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's an excellent intro into Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Absolutely. It goes to show how smart the band is to, you know, take the samples from a radio call-in show that Chuck was a part of and resample it and then show you, like, what people are saying about them on the album. And that's been used many times since then. I mean, one that comes to mind most recently is, like, Kendrick Lamar had, people talking about hip hop, you know, that was 2020 or something, like, of people like talking about how Kendrick Lamar is not good for the black community and things like that. Of course, it was like Regis or some bullshit. I don't know. So good. How we feel? All in the positive, assuming.
Oh, absolutely.
Damn near perfect.
I'm just going to continue listening to this record next week, too.
Yeah.
100% absolute must listen before you exit the stage.
Yeah. How did you guys feel this one versus Takes a Nation of Millions?
Takes a Nation of Millions is more friendly to the listener, but this one rewards more. I think one of the things that I read about this was that it had the same feel that Sly and the Family Stone, there's a riot going on.
Yeah. Like
that sort of this griminess to it that I think is pretty apropos. No.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you're right. I think, like I said before, I think Takes a Nation of Millions is something that can really get your... It can get those... The songs get stuck in your head, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think this one is a little more, it's more nuanced and it has a more cohesive album, like
I think I prefer Black Planet. I really like Nation of Millions, but I think this was the one I'll keep on coming back to.
Perfect record. Merch, what are you listening to next week?
Amazing. All right, next time we'll be listening to Sinead O'Connor, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. All right, thanks, y'all. Now they're gone, yeah, I'll check out a movie, but it'll take a black one to move me. Get me the hell away from this TV. All this news and views are beneath me. So all I hear about is shots ringing out about gang putting each other's head out. So I'd rather kick some slang out. All right, fellas, let's go hang out. Hollywood or would they not make us all look bad like I know they had? But some things I'll never forget, yeah. So step and fetch this shit. For all the years we looked like clowns, the joke is over, smell the smoke from all around.